We have to address something that we talked about many, many times on this show. You say it's controversial. I'm not so sure. And that is the connection between Alzheimer's disease and aluminum. Very popular concept. Every time it comes up in conversation, people tell me that's all been disproved. As a matter of fact, I remember putting out a book in 1989 called The McDougall Program, 12 Days to Dynamic Health. And when I wrote a section in there on the connection between Alzheimer's and aluminum, my publishers came back to me and said, well, that's all been disproven, John. You can't possibly put a section in there in your book. It'll discredit the entire book. And I said, well, wait a minute. Let's look at what the scientific research says. And I did a Medline search on the computer and looked at the articles discussing the relationship between Alzheimer's and aluminum. I have to say every one that I pulled up showed a positive association between Alzheimer's and aluminum. Maybe I was just lucky on that particular literature research, but I did the same thing this evening, and almost every article I pulled up said the same thing. Could aluminum be the cause of Alzheimer's disease? Well, my guest tonight is the director of Neuropathology Division of Mount Sinai Medical Center in New York. He's the man who started this rumor, so to speak, and we'll find out how much fact there is associated with this rumor. His name is Dr. Daniel Pearl, MD, pathologist. Dr. Pearl, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
So isn't it true, didn't you start this thing that where pots and pans, aluminum pots and pans, are now on the fear list for people?
Well, I guess in a way it did start with our work. This was a number of years ago, but it was our original work that found that aluminum accumulates in the brains of individuals who have Alzheimer's disease. And that we found that it not only accumulates there, but it appears to accumulate in the damaged cells that are characteristic of the disease.
And then you went one step further in your investigation. We'll get into the details of the investigation. You also suggested in some of your research that's published in the reviewed literature, you suggested that Lou Gehrig's disease also may be caused by aluminum?
Well, the evidence on Lou Gehrig's disease is not as strong as we have on Alzheimer's disease, but there are some indications that aluminum may in some way be involved as well.
And Dr. Daniel Pearl, you also suggested that some cases of Parkinson's disease may be caused by aluminum?
Well, I don't know that we've gone as far as they cause, but again, we've found that aluminum accumulates in the cells that become damaged in this disease.
Now, in one of the articles that I read from the lay press, actually it was from Discover, September 1992, you suggested that people should not throw their pots and pans away. Now, that was 3 years ago. Do you still feel that way? They shouldn't throw their aluminum pots and pans away?
Well, I think it's a decision that we all have to make in terms of how we look at this work. We know that the aluminum does accumulate in the brain. The question is, where is it coming from and how does it get in there? And if we look at the way in which we're exposed to this metal, we're exposed in many different ways, and pots and pans is just one aspect of our exposure. The thing that I was concerned about is that people would think that if you just remove the pots and pans from your house, that was the only way you would be exposed, and that's certainly not the case.
So if I was going to come to your home and look through your cupboards, there'd be no aluminum pots and pans.
Actually, that's not exactly true, to be perfectly honest.
Would there be aluminum spray antiperspirants in your bathroom cabinet?
No, there wouldn't.
Oh, I was pretty sure that would come out.
Yes.
And hopefully I can set this up and not confuse the lay audience, because I've been a little confused over this issue. There's three camps out there, or maybe just two. One, the group of people, your researchers at Mount Sinai in New York, who believe that aluminum is the at least in part involved in the cause of Alzheimer's disease. And then there's another camp that's called amyloid, people that believe the amyloid, this protein. And then is there a third camp that believes something called the tau protein is the cause of it, or is it the basis for this disease developing, or is it just two camps?
Well, there are the two camps of amyloid versus this protein called tau. But when you talk to them in terms of the importance of amyloid versus tau, you're not really talking about the underlying cause of the disease. They're really talking about which part of the abnormalities we see in the brains is the more important in damaging the brain. something has to come before amyloid or come before tau in terms of what's causing this thing and what's causing it to happen. But the argument, the two camps that you referred to, are really which change is more important in terms of the basic aspects of the disease.
Well, the reason I brought that up was more for my benefit than anybody else's, because I keep up. Every time I see an article on Alzheimer's, I read what they have to say about it. And they had me confused for a while. Not really. I mean, I always was in your camp in terms of what the cause was, but I just couldn't understand where the argument was to have these reactionary proteins occur. And in preparation for our interview, I did a Medline research, and what I found was several articles published in the last few months that show that aluminum is an initiating factor in the development of both of these circumstances, amyloid and also tau protein.
Well, that's been some of the more exciting and interesting aspects of what's happened in research in the last 6 months, is that other laboratories, not our own actually, have been coming up with evidence that aluminum can affect the formation of amyloid. Aluminum can affect the way in which this other protein, tau, is formed and processed, and that we're now beginning to start to see that there may be a scientifically identifiable sequence of events that occur that would lead to these accumulated abnormal proteins.
But the thought that I want to leave the listener with is that aluminum, as far as I know, is the only controllable one of these things that we can do anything about. Dr. Pearl, how did you first get interested in the connection between Alzheimer's and aluminum?
Well, as I say, it started a number of years ago. I had always been interested in Alzheimer's disease because it's such an important disease, and at the time I had available to me some very sensitive equipment for measuring metals in organ specimens, basically. This had been used in lung tissue for a number of years, but had never been used really in the brain. And we were among the first ones to adapt this equipment to looking at brain cells, and decided to look in Alzheimer's disease to see whether the profile of metals contained in brain cells affected by Alzheimer's disease were different than normal cells. And it's at that point that we began to see these accumulations of aluminum that started all this.
Well, let me, again, say something that I hope doesn't confuse the listener, but Alzheimer's disease, to diagnose Alzheimer's disease, you have to have neurofibril tangles. Is that not correct?
That's correct.
Okay. And to have neurofibril tangles, which are just, as I understand, are just tangles of fibrous tissue that you see in the brain under the microscope, and to get neurofibril tangles, or let me put it this way, each neurofibril tangle has a large composition of aluminum silicate in it. Is that correct?
Well, the silicon, we haven't found silicon in them. It has aluminum, but not silicon.
Okay, so it has a large amount of aluminum in it.
Right.
So then if I can just kind of follow up on this kind of thinking, you don't have Alzheimer's unless you have the neurofibril tangles. You can't have the neurofibril tangles unless you have the aluminum. So I can't understand why there's any discussion as to whether or not aluminum causes Alzheimer's disease, because unless you have those three ingredients together, you can't get the disease.
Well, I tend to agree with that, but it's the ability to measure these small amounts. I mean, it's you say there are large amounts, and actually the aluminum concentration is substantially higher than the surrounding normal brain tissue, but it's still a very small amount of aluminum, and it's very difficult to measure it. And actually, other colleagues who've attempted to do this using somewhat similar techniques have found that this is extremely difficult to do.
But you do it, and you reproduce it in your research division.
It continues to be reproduced. We've now actually changed to a completely different technique that's even more sensitive and more specific, and the same data comes out, and we find aluminum in case after case after case.
There was some reference in this Discover article that some of the research was funded by people who get other findings, was funded by the aluminum industry. Is that, did I read that correctly?
Well, yes, we understand that that's happened. Obviously, the aluminum industry is not particularly happy with these findings, but this is the way the data comes out, so this is what we find.
And how popular are you with the Alcoa aluminum people?
Well, I've never stopped to ask.
But they have asked some questions about you, haven't they?
That's my understanding. Yes, they have.
And anything more than just a bit of an investigation to see what kind of a man Dr. Daniel Pearl is?
Well, particularly in the early days, they were concerned about who I was and what kind of work I was capable of doing, and whenever I'd go and give a talk, they would be sure to be there to listen to what I have to say, and they were obviously following this very carefully because I think they were very concerned about it.
But is it fair to say now that, I mean, all the research I pulled up, there was one dissenting article that you couldn't find the same aluminum concentrations your lab found, but I mean, all the articles that I pulled up just before this show showed a connection between, I mean, they're talking about a causal relationship between Alzheimer's and aluminum.
Mm-hmm.
So are they they have too many people out there pointing the guilty finger at them that they probably leave you alone a little more than they used to?
Yeah, I think that more accurately describes it.
All right, now let me just take this conversation one step further. As we talked about, you've got to have this characteristic finding in the brain called neurofibril tangles to diagnose Alzheimer's. Is it fair to say that people who have the worst Alzheimer's disease have the largest numbers of these neurofibril tangles in the olfactory lobes of their brain, which is a stalk of the brain?
Well, let's take it one step at a time.
Okay.
In general, the more neurofibrillary tangles you have in certain areas of the brain, the more severe the disease is.
We actually
just published a paper on that, and there are actually several other labs that have similar findings. So the more tangles you do have, the more severe the impairment is. Now, when you look at where these tangles accumulate in the brain, one of the areas that's most sensitive and that collects the largest numbers of tangles happens to be the areas of the brain that are connected by these nerve cell pathways to the olfactory system.
Through the nose. In other words, just to kind of cut to the bottom line here, Dr. Daniel Pearl believes that one of the primary portals of entry of aluminum is through the nose. Is that correct?
Well, I think it's certainly a potential portal of entry. I don't know that we've demonstrated it. We certainly haven't demonstrated it in man, but we've got some experimental evidence to suggest that aluminum actually can get into the brain through the olfactory system.
And you're going to tell us when we come back about the studies that show that those people who use the aluminum chloride-containing antiperspirants are the dumbest people in our society, have the greatest chance of Alzheimer's, in other words. I wonder if he's going to tell us that when we get back. With me, the Director of Neuropathology Division, Mount Sinai Medical Center, New York, Dr. Daniel Pearl. Have there been studies done to associate intelligence with the use of antiperspirants or any loss of intelligence?
Not that I'm aware of.
No. Well, it'll be good research to do sometime.
Right.
But you're concerned about it, aren't you?
Yeah, this is one area that I am concerned about.
And it makes, there's so many options. People can use deodorants as opposed to antiperspirants.
That's right. I mean, the antiperspirant deodorants in general contain aluminum in them. They're formulated for maximum absorption. And it seems to me that to apply these as an aerosol spray that certainly can and probably does get in through to the nasal cavity is a mistake when there are so many other alternatives available to people.
And before we go to the callers, one of your associates, I don't know how close an associate he is, did a study on using an aluminum chelating agent, desferoxamine, to treat people with Alzheimer's disease. And this desferoxamine removes aluminum from the body, and the patients did better, didn't they?
That's what was claimed in this study. A number of people have had some concerns about the way the study was done, and I think that it was not classically done the way, you know, the people that do drug studies would like them to be done, but the results seem to indicate that there was some improvement in some of the patients.
And recently, and again, you know, I discovered this just looking through some of the research, people are suggesting that we might use another chelating agent, which is silicates. Is that correct?
Yeah. Well, the silicates don't act truly as a chelating agent, but may protect against the effects of aluminum.
So do you see any possibility for a treatment of Alzheimer's patients either presently or in the near future where you can slow the progression of this disease based upon the understanding, your belief, and I have to say my belief, that aluminum is causal in this disease?
Well, I think if we can understand the on the level of the biology, the biochemistry of how it's working, yes, I think that there are options here that are amenable to a therapeutic approach.
But they're not in the hands of the general doctor yet.
That's right. No.
Just research tools.
Not something
tools.
That your listeners who may have a loved one with Alzheimer's disease can go to their local physician or Alzheimer's center and get yet. We need to do more research on this before we can really have something that we can apply to patients.
All right, let's go to the phone calls. John, welcome to Your Good Health.
Hello?
Yes, John, you're on with Dr. Daniel Pearl.
Yes, keeping in mind that only water is used in cooking rice, virtually all the rice cookers I've ever seen have aluminum surface. What value, if any, would be the use of a Teflon-covered rice cooker?
Do you recommend Teflon rice cookers as opposed to aluminum rice cookers, Dr. Pearl?
Well, in the interaction of a cooking vessel with food, it's a very complex thing, and it has a very complex chemistry. By and large, unless there's a rather strong acid in the pot or the vessel, most of the aluminum just stays on the aluminum pan. Rice would not be an acid situation.
But tomatoes would be.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
That would be a real big deal, tomatoes.
Tomatoes, rhubarb, a number of things that are acid foods, that'll start to etch off the aluminum. But I think rice would probably not be a situation where there'd be much leaching of the aluminum off the cooker.
But wouldn't it be a fair statement for people to do everything they can to reduce their aluminum intake?
Well, I think that if one is concerned about this, then you have to begin to start to look at all sources, and there are a number of them. Some of them are marked on labels, and some of them are not, in terms of how you might be exposed to it.
Well, we're going to talk about some of those sources, including medicines that you may be taking that are loaded with aluminum. Thank you very much for calling, John. Dr. Pearl, the reason I suggested that there's a relationship between antiperspirants and Alzheimer's is the article that you're the main feature of in Discover, September 1992. Said the following thing. It said in 1990, University of Washington researchers found a slightly higher risk of Alzheimer's among people who used aluminum-containing antiperspirants than those who didn't. Do you recall that study?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So I guess I wasn't too far off base.
Right.
Let's go back to our callers. And, Jerry, you're on with Dr. Daniel Pearl. You have a question?
Yes, I do. The question I have is similar to the one about antiperspirants, and that is, as I remember a few years ago, the teaching was that antacids don't cause a higher risk of Alzheimer's disease, even though they're almost all aluminum-based. I wonder if that's still thought to be the case.
There hasn't been really a good study of antacid use in Alzheimer's disease. There was one study that looked at just antacid use in general, but didn't look at the formulation. As you may know, some antacids do contain large amounts of aluminum, but others do not. And this study never really looked at it. So at the present time, as far as I'm aware, there really isn't the data that we need to answer that question.
Yeah, but can you answer the question, isn't antacids and other medication usage a very large load of aluminum on the body?
One can take in very large quantities of aluminum through medications.
And there are certain interactions that cause that aluminum to be absorbed more readily than others?
Yes, yes.
And medication antacids may be one of them.
Right.
So people need to read the side of the bottle. And the other thing is there's going to be aluminum in many of the food products they eat too. Is that not true?
That's right.
But that's not always on the label.
That's correct. It's a very common food additive, and very often is not listed in the labels.
Hmm. So it's going to be.
Excuse me.
Go ahead, Jerry.
Shouldn't it be pretty conclusive that, given that so many people take lots of antacids for, you know, esophageal reflux and other conditions like that, that there ought to be a population of people who clearly would have a higher incidence of Alzheimer's if there was a clear association, don't you think?
This is a difficult question. The first thing is that this doesn't seem to be a simple exposure to a a toxin developing a disease like lead poisoning or something like that. We don't know how you have to be exposed, in what way, whether this this concept of the olfactory route is more important or an oral route is more important, how long you have to be exposed, and even whether certain types of exposure are more important than others. Obviously, this is also interacting with genetic factors in terms of one's susceptibility. There are clearly important genetic factors in developing Alzheimer's disease. So, you know, the kinds of studies that one would need to do are very detailed, and the data might not be immediately obvious just by looking at people who took antacids for reflux, let's say.
Now, thanks for calling, Jerry. But isn't there, and there have been several studies published on the aluminum content of drinking water and the incidence of Alzheimer's disease that have shown a very positive association?
Most of the studies on drinking water have shown a positive association. I think that some of my colleagues in these population studies, again, say that they need to be done in a more detailed fashion. But at least some of them that have been done so far, I would say the majority of them have shown a connection between aluminum content and the general frequency of Alzheimer's disease in the population.
Well, Dr. Daniel Pearl, based on all we've said, wouldn't it be a safe stand for the consumer to take to say, look, I don't want to be a human guinea pig for the next 20 or 30 years until they finally settle this issue and decide aluminum does definitely or doesn't cause Alzheimer's disease?
Well, I think that's something that each one of your viewers has to consider in the same way that you consider many other health issues in terms of what you want to be exposed to.
Is there any downside to eliminating aluminum from your diet? I mean, is this a nutrient?
No, it's not used at all in the body. It's not essential for life. As far as we know, if there were no aluminum in the earth, biologic activity would go on in the same way that it always has.
So a conservative person who wanted to take as little risk as possible and who respected the research that you've done and the close tie between Alzheimer's and aluminum would err on the side of caution and do everything they could to keep away from it.
No, you won't get any argument from me.
I didn't think so. Let's go back to the phones. Mr. Sullivan, welcome to Your Good Health. Mr. Sullivan.
Yes, good evening. Thank you for taking my call. I have two very quick questions.
You need to turn down your radio, Mr. Sullivan.
You bet. I've done so. I have two very quick questions for your guest, Dr. McDougall. Number one, Dr. Pearl, do you have any comment on the connection of, as well as aluminum, of mercury in the brain? That's not question number one. I won't hold you up to discuss it. But number two, I use a lot of honey, and I get excellent honey at a very excellent price, but in aluminum cans. And since it is not being cooked in aluminum cans, and it's supposed to be unheated, nevertheless, honey is also, as you know, a very acid substance. And I wonder if there's any danger of absorbing any particular amount of aluminum from that standpoint. Thank you. You can disconnect me and
I'll just turn my radio up
for your answer.
All right. Thank you for calling. So what do you think? Is honey highly reactive with aluminum?
Well, I wasn't aware that honey was acid, but I'll take your word for it. I would assume that this aluminum can that it's in is probably coated with plastic on its inside in the same way that beverage cans are. Most of your carbonated beverages are quite acid, remarkably acid. And they wouldn't be able to last in an aluminum can for more than a few days.
Yes, but isn't it true that you can measure the aluminum in the beverage?
Yes.
And certain beverages, and I can't remember the article, but I do remember certain types of soft drinks had higher contents of aluminum than other types.
Yes. Yeah, there is a study that suggests that certain beverages do have high aluminum content in these aluminum cans. The integrity of the plastic liner, of course, how well that's put on. I mean, I guess
so
it's not an area that I'm an expert on, but I know there are a couple of studies that suggest that some beverages do have high aluminum content.